Hello, hello, and welcome to the E27 podcast. We're back with another episode of Let's Not Talk About Work. Today I'm joined by Daniel Tong. He's an entrepreneur in residence for Entrepreneurs First here in Singapore. He was also the country manager of Singapore Service Hero back in the day. So we're doing this. Let me remind you of the game rules. We actually have these little airport bottles of Black Label. And if we talk about our companies, mine being an unknown media company, and Daniel, if he mentions his job or things from his job, we have to take a swig out of it. So it's Johnny Walker, Black Label. Yeah, I haven't eaten today, so I'm a little worried if I get in trouble. Okay, hi Daniel.
Hello, I love this unnamed media company, self-deprecating humor.
Yeah, so we're gonna talk about, so me and Daniel have both not been, I guess you would call it founders, but we have been working in startups for, me total is about 3 years. I don't know what Daniel, Daniel's 3 too?
Yep, 3 years, but I think slightly less than 3 years, so it's about two and a half years.
Okay. So we're going to talk about just what working in the startups, and we're trying to be real, I guess. So we're going to start with a little bit of negative part. So I guess I'll start with my pitch, and then you can bring your thoughts in, and then your pitch, and I'll bring my thoughts in, and we'll go back and forth. So I think the first thing we want to talk about is there's a lot of, I guess, negative press around startups that's not actually negative. Every time companies write articles about startups, they always mention the long work hours and the high stress and the craziness of it all. But I think, at least for me and Daniel, I think that's like why we got into it. And it's not necessarily a negative, it's actually a positive. It can be stressful in the moment, but it's better to be entertaining rather than boring, right? So it might be stressful, but at least you're not sitting there scanning QR codes all day for 40 hours a week. So what do you think of that general idea?
The stress part.
Yeah.
I think the thing about startups is that people see the glam of fundraising, but they don't see the crap that goes behind the scenes. So in my last company, we pitched this idea that everything is seamlessly a matching platform where supply and demand just automatically matches. But the crap that goes behind the scenes is really a bunch of people calling service providers to try to get them to connect to consumers. So a lot of these non-scalable things happen at the really beginning part of things, and although it's glamorized that you know we have this fully automated solution, the reality is that a lot of just non-scalable stuff goes behind the scenes, and this is actually a huge part of startup life. It's hugely not automated at the beginning, and it's a lot of grind.
Why is it not automated? Is it just the code isn't up to snuff?
Yeah. So in the last startup that I was in, we had this idea that we want to connect.
We might have to take a shot after this, because we're getting close.
Yes. So the idea was to connect consumers to service providers like cleaners, plumbers, electricians, and handymen. But the reality was that when we weren't sure about the idea, we definitely had to make it seem as though it was a full-blown product. So we had this app for the consumer, but in the back end, there was no back end built for that yet. It was just a list of service providers that we have in our directory list, and then we had to call them manually.
Do you think
once the customer made a request? So from the customer's point of view, it looked seamless, but from our point of view, every single usage of the app, there was a manual process for the first 6 months.
Do you think there's any ethical issues with that? I personally don't. I mean, you're kind of being weird with your pitch, but at the end of the day, as long as
because you're testing something out, right? You're testing whether or not consumers, for example, in our case, you're testing whether or not consumers would use a mobile app to book services, and you have no clue if this is something that people really want. So instead of building this whole full-blown system, your minimum viable product here is really just getting that front end out in front of consumers, and then you settle the mess behind the scenes until you reach a certain stage where you can actually get your engineers to build the whole thing. But that comes with money, that comes with fundraising, and so it's not fun at the beginning when you have no money and you have no resources, so it's really just a lot of human labor.
And you think that's fairly common throughout the startup industry?
Absolutely. I've seen a lot of, I mean, we've seen even Lazada right now. I was talking to one of my friends there. They run a full-blown like manual customer operations team, right, in Singapore.
No, I know, health tech, they do that, but that's almost just part of it because the customer service, like if a company, if an app is like four people, they have 25 because they have 20 people that are just there for health updates and stuff like that.
Yeah. No, but the point is that it's a lot of human intensive work still behind the scenes. Like if you look at companies, we share the same investors, the same companies as Golden Gate Ventures. They've invested in our company, my last company. So a lot of these portfolio companies as well, you can see that they keep a lot of the inventory, they do a lot of that manual. Yeah, they buy a lot of the products first when they expand. So when we look at Carousel, for example, when they expand overseas, they also buy a lot of the stuff from the very consumers.
Yeah.
So that is very hacky as well. And I realized that I've talked a lot about my company.
So our last episode, we went the whole time and we didn't even get close. And we've gone 5 minutes and we're already taking swigs. So cheers.
Cheers.
All right, man, it is way too early. We bought the black label at 7-Eleven before noon and got some weird looks from the steward, from the checkout lady, as we deserved. Okay, so my thing is, I think one of the least sexy parts of the startups is the malaise that can hit in. I think I had a conversation with you and then met an investor and kind of told him about the conversation, and he put some perspective and actually kicked me out of the malaise, which is cool. I think sometimes the day-to-day grind, you can get like stuck in a dead zone, I guess, for like months, like 2, 3, 4 months, all the employees, even the founders themselves, because things are maybe not moving as fast. Or I think there's an excitement when you first build something. The first year is exciting, it's crazy, it's hectic, you build it, but once it starts to work and you have to build the next step, which is maybe a Series A, Series B company, it can actually get kind of boring. And I don't think people mention it. It's a lot of like accounting paperwork, financials, auditing, stuff like that, that is just honestly just super boring. And especially with millennials the way we are and young people being a little bit easier to jump ship on other companies, I think they don't realize that the excitement doesn't last for 10 years. The building part's fun, but then to get to a Series A, Series B company, there's like a 1 to 2 year part that's fairly boring. And I think we do a bad job in the media, I'll take a shot, of telling people that.
So since you're in the media as well, I mean, you're talking about your company, and was kind of like the crap that you had to go through at the beginning as well?
So I think my biggest learning for the startups industry was constant innovation. I think that was, it's really easy to come into a company for the first 3, maybe even 6 months, and come up with fresh ideas and cool things, and we're going to try this and we're going to try that. But then the thing that I learned, which I feel confident in now, is that you have to keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it. And constantly innovating like that can be exhausting. And then when you get exhausted, you get a malaise because you're tired in general. And so we like, let's say we launch a new series, right? We launch this podcast series. It's really fun to launch this podcast series. So we do it for 3 months. It's great. But then 2 months from now, I need to think of a different thing we can launch. And then 2 months after that, I need to think of something else we can launch. And then 2 months after that, I need to think of something else. Because you always have to be moving, and you have to be moving quite quickly. The first time you launch, it's fine. Second time, maybe it's great. But then when you start to launch from 3, 4, 5, 6, it's hard because it's exhausting. And then maybe 6, 7, 8, which I guess is where I am now or so, you just get used to it and it just becomes part of it. And you might get frustrated because sometimes it's like you're dropping this bomb on me, but then you're like, oh, well, this is just the startup life. And
yeah, it does feel messy as well, right? Because you're launching all these podcasts and you've got to maintain momentum and come up with new things.
Yeah, sometimes you wish you had more time to see if something works, but maybe it doesn't work. I mean, learning how to kill things is also hard because when it's your idea, it's hard to kill it. So that wasn't explicitly talking about my work, so I'll take one of these. At least it's good at alcohol. Man. Okay. So we're on this subject. Let's talk about VCs. I like talking to VCs as a reporter because they spend so much time in front of their computer that they have a pretty good 30,000 viewpoint of what's happening. And so I get a lot of good insights from VCs, honestly. A lot of entrepreneurs are great and it's fun to talk to them, but in terms of like the industry, they're usually hyper focused on either their sector or even just their company and may not understand like what's happening from a 30,000 foot level. And I like that part about talking with VCs. So I guess that's a positive. What are your overall kind of thoughts?
Like it or not, VCs are here to stay. There's a lot of money in Southeast Asia. My thoughts of VCs is that they are your allies in the sense that if you have validated your product and you've got a good market fit, you need cash and bank loans might not be feasible at the early stage. You need VCs. On the flip side though, nothing comes for free. And I think having raised venture funds before, you know that there are strings attached with their money, right? They expect you to grow, which means they expect you to, for example, hire aggressively or market aggressively. And sometimes that comes with promises of following on in your next investment, but nothing's for sure.
I think people think sometimes their concern with VCs is that they're gonna be too hands-on, but actually one of the problems is they lead you on and then once they give you their money, they kind of ignore you. And if you're like, guys, we really need help, they're like, oh, tough.
So the thing with VCs is that they want something in return for the money. They want you to be growing really fast, obviously. They want your valuation to be going up, obviously, so that they have a paper return. But what this means potentially is that there could be a misalignment from in terms of where you need to go in the short term and where they want you to go in the short term, right? So for example, if they want you to grow really, really, really fast because they feel like that's the best way to raise money, but you're not quite there from a product market fit perspective, it could potentially waste the money you've raised and over-leverage your company, which might hinder your growth.
Do you think we should hold LPs to the fire, hold their feet to the fire more? Because at the end of the day, VCs are just, their job is to make money for their LPs. So they're also getting pushed to do things that, just because, you know, their LP wants whatever, their return on their investment. So do you think, we just ignore them. We almost like, honestly, like I bet you a lot of people don't even know they exist.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, you don't know what the pressure is behind the scenes with VCs. Maybe that's another podcast idea you could have. I think they're definitely under some pressure as well when they push startups to grow fast. Could be pressure to exit from their LPs before they can raise another round. That's also really true. But yes, so VCs, double-edged sword. You kind of need them. But then at the same time, when you have them, you've got to be mindful of whether or not their advice might necessarily be right for your company at the time you're in.
Okay, last negative point before we get to some of the positives. We were talking about salaries, and there's one specific unique trait of startup world, which is equity. A lot of times companies offer lower salaries, but they give you equity in order to incentivize you to, in my opinion, accept a lower salary. So, what are your thoughts on equity as a...
Yeah. First of all, companies don't necessarily give you equity. It's very rare. They give you equity up front or they give you stock options. So, it's not even equity. It's like lousier than equity because you have to buy the option, maybe at a nominal price.
To be fair, let's just get this out of the way. Public companies, it's fine because that's like a tangible thing that they give you that... It goes up and down and you can, you know, sell it like a thing.
But for private companies, they give you the option to buy private stock options at a nominal rate, maybe at like a dollar. But you're still only making the difference if the price that the company sells off is more than the price in its original price, right? So for example, you buy the companies, you exercise the option to buy the company at $3 per share, but it sells us at $5 and you only make $2, you're not making the full $5.
And so, if it sells at $1, you're
losing money. But here's the thing, right? Startups can't pay, so they always offer stock options. It's normal. Like right now, I'm also exploring business ideas, and then when I can't afford full-time salaries, I offer like shares or stock options. But the thing is, as an employee, when you are thinking of joining a startup, and if you're getting like 1% or 0.5%, then essentially, if you're accepting a lower salary, you're really betting big that this startup is going to be billions of dollars, right? Because literally Google made all their employees millionaires.
Yeah.
But this means that you have to be really certain that this is the right startup to join. And if you look at the data, I wrote this in an article on E27 actually on the Singapore ecosystem. There's only been 13, I believe, IPOs since 2001, and
they take longer too. Everything takes longer in Asia, at least in Southeast Asia. Yeah. So in China or Silicon Valley, if you take equity options, half the time that company is going to sell in 2 years, and so you do get a chunk of it. But here, the 2 years is 6 years, and so you have to be crazy patient.
6 years might be optimistic. You see, yeah, yeah, you see, yeah, 10 to 11 years on average, but. Garena, which is SEA now, I think they IPO in within 9 years.
They're IPOing.
Yeah, they're IPOing within 9 years. So it's a very long and patient game, and you have to be really sure that the company is going to make it big, and you have to be really sure that that you will stay for that long, because your stock options also vest with time, which means you don't get the full equity immediately. So that's something to think about. But of course, many people are excited about, you know, owning a part of a fast-growing company. But I would say salary still matters. Just see the option as a bonus rather than a sure thing when you're deciding on the company you're joining. Yeah.
Yeah. I think approach the salary as are you willing to work for this amount of money for 4 years, maybe with occasional little bumps and raise, and you'll probably be underpaid according to your corporate friends. But if you're willing to do that, then it's fine. I just think sometimes people take the equity as their salary, even though, I mean, and then if the company dies, then obviously you don't see any of that.
Yeah, but I think we're being too negative here, because I think this is why, when we're moving to the positive, I guess, why you accept a lower salary. I think there are a lot of benefits in joining a startup as well. And I think this is where we kind of talk about...
Let's segue! This is where we jump in. By the way, for anyone listening who has a budget or is in a corporate office, this is where we jump in and put your company in, and we advertise your brand. So holler at me and we'll put your company advertisement right here. Okay, we're switching to positives.
Yes, so positives about, I think the main reason why people should join a startup as a founding team or a founding employee really is that you can learn a lot, and a lot more than a corporate job will give you, right? So I think if I were to compare myself with my friends who are in investment banking and consulting, you know that when you join a startup, you are really getting the hands-on skills that many people don't have. You are able to, you know, you're executing operations, you're dealing with customers, you're dealing with suppliers, you are even facing the media, investors. So basically, the exposure that I guess a startup gives you is really learning how to build a business as if it's yours, right? Mm-hmm. Without putting your own money in. So I think that is really an applied MBA is really one of the key learnings and positives, I think, of joining a startup, which may be why you would forego a high salary at the start, because building up that learning, that human capital, could be very valuable in future. But what do you think, Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, from my learning, it's more about reading and education. And I guess now I'm learning how to manage people, which is a wholly different experience, because I'm editor, so I have our team, and then I guess technically I'm the boss, but that's weird to say.
You're slaves.
Yeah. So, but learning how to manage a team is something I've literally never done before this.
And how old are you?
28. Oh, how old am I? I'm 28.
Yeah, so that's not normal, right, in a company to, as in you don't get that opportunity in a corporate.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I actually, my uncle's 50, and I ask him questions every now and then on advice, because he's in a corporate, but it took him till he was in his 40s, basically, to be a manager of people. So what gets you going to work every day? Like, why do you get up and not, I mean, you have the startup experience, you're country manager of a big startup. You could probably go join Liberty Mutual right now and at least get a job. Hmm. What keeps you coming here?
So for me, my title in my role currently at Entrepreneur First, I'm gonna get shortened this now. I'm an entrepreneur in residence. So basically, I have the responsibility of working and launching new initiatives within the fund that we have right now. So I get to lead and spearhead projects, and at the same time, because this role in Entrepreneur First is particularly interesting because I get to do it part-time, so I get to also work on my own business ideas. Mm. For those of you who are not really familiar with Entrepreneur Residence role, it's basically a role where instead of the VC finding an idea they like and then doing due diligence of management, they already like, for example, certain people, like for instance myself, and these people they feel has significant business knowledge where they can pass on to either their portfolio companies or they can build stuff within the fund. So my role allows me to kind of jam with people at EF and as well as validate my own ideas on the side, which is a really nice sweet spot. So what gets me going is really this sick advantage of leveraging on Entrepreneur First's network and investor and mentor network, and at the same time working on my own ideas, which is really exciting because I get to launch projects within EF and I get to validate ideas by the side, which is really what I think is useful for someone that is transiting from a founding team to becoming a founder himself.
Okay. Yeah. So I wanna curse on my own podcast, so I'm gonna just say this. Our first half we talked a lot of shit about the startups, so let's blow some sunshine up its ass. And what's your favorite part of the ecosystem?
My favorite part of the ecosystem is how the media is quite supportive to people who are launching new initiatives.
Too supportive. We get you know, let's say that.
It's true, but I think if you are a young company and you're starting out, no one gives you a shot, right? Yeah. And I think the tech media, and I'm quite thankful for that in my last venture, Kevin actually wrote...
No, we're not doing that.
Okay, so he wrote an article about my last venture, and I'm really thankful that, you know, like there is a lot of support from that perspective. There's a lot of people in the ecosystem as well that are willing to hear about your ideas and just not think you're crazy. Mm. Because in the real world, when you're telling people that, you know, hey, I want to launch app that connects people to cleaners and plumbers, they'll think you're mad. Like, they think that you're genuinely out of your mind and that you should be a lawyer or a banker. So the ecosystem is helpful in that aspect. And as well as when you're launching companies overseas, I think that network, that connection inroads is useful. But that's it, there's also a downside to it, which is like, I feel like in Singapore, at least the ecosystem is really small. And so everybody knows everybody by the end of like a year.
Yeah, but so that goes back to actually my positive, which is as a foreigner, it's actually really nice because I don't quite feel like a super foreigner. And I think I have talked to some friends who are in other industries who are French, Italian, Canadian, African, and they mentioned that they have a hard time breaking out of the foreigner bubble into the local bubble. And I think that's true, and I think it's true of not Singapore, I think it's true of every country in the whole world, which is when you're a foreigner, you can get stuck into these foreigner avenues. And I think actually the startup ecosystem in Singapore, at least, but I also get the sense it's the same in Malaysia and Indonesia, is very good about breaking that bubble quickly. And like you said, like, you do get to know everyone, but for me as an outsider, I do get to know everyone quickly, but the people that I know are mostly Singaporean with some other Southeast Asians and then some European and non-Asian foreigners. And so the startup ecosystem becomes more important than where you're from, which I think is unique.
And to add to that as well, in the Singapore ecosystem in particular, you get basically all the VCs are based in Singapore, right?
Yeah.
Even though they invest in Southeast Asia. So the added advantage as well of being in the Singapore ecosystem is that you have all the inroads to get investments if you have a great enough idea. So it's also easy to seek investments compared to other regions.
It's true. I talked to a guy yesterday, and he's moving his company, not moving his company, sorry. He's expanding his company into Singapore. And one of the reasons he's expanding his company is because a lot of regional headquarters are here, and he can make deals with these regional heads. And it's a lot easier, like, let's say Google, for example. Google has offices all over the world, but their Southeast Asia headquarters is in Singapore. And so let's say you're in the Philippines, and you meet this Google representative and you're trying to have a deal with them, it's great. You might have a wonderful meeting, you might have the deal on it, but at the end of the day, they need to bring that proposal to their boss, and their boss is probably in Singapore.
Yeah.
So he's expanding his company and moving a physical operation here so he can skip that middle part. And so instead of meeting the guy in the Philippines who has to go to Singapore, he might as well meet the guy in Singapore who's actually making the decisions. All right, we have about 5 more minutes left. So what do you hope to continue to get out of this bullshit?
The startup scene. So I used to be in a startup. Now I work in a fund and a company builder. So you get to learn different perspectives of how is it like on the builder side and what's it like on the buy side. And I think that gives you perspective of how of how everything works, it makes you a better entrepreneur from that perspective. So my end goal is, of course, to one day run my own company. I don't know how huge it would be, but hopefully it sustains itself and I become a good enough entrepreneur in my own right. And so I feel like that's what I want to get out of this ecosystem. And really just helping people, really, because I think having done 3 years now, there are more and more young people now interested in doing startups, and connecting people to the people I know is something that I feel is really useful. So yeah, anyone who's listening to this podcast is interested in, you know, anything, feel free to just drop me an email. I don't know whether you can put my email down there, but yes.
I can put it in the show notes, why not?
I think most people do startups because they have the ambition one day to build their own company. And again, I think I wrote about that in the article of why I think it's never been a better time to build a startup right now. I mean, the ecosystem has tons of cash, so there is a lot of money available, but there are not enough good teams. Mm. So I think that presents a huge opportunity for people who are ambitious and are capable to really build an important company.
And I'm going to wrap it up and let you pitch something. Do you have something you'd like to pitch? It's my reward to the people that come onto my show. Free okay. advertising.
If I pitch, I have to drink a...
No, the drinking thing is over. But since we already drank, we'll take a shot to finish this up.
Sure. So I think there is an opening, I think, in Entrepreneur First. We're hiring for a bunch of roles. I particularly recommend my role, which is an entrepreneur in residence. If you're looking to build a startup but don't have a fixed idea yet, but at the same time want access to investors, to how startup building works, consider applying for the EIR role at Entrepreneur First, because we're hiring.
Awesome. Okay, since we've taken about three or four shots already, let's finish it up. So cheers.